So I do a lot of marking. I send a lot of work and get a lot back.
Okay.
Not everyone works that way. It's very much something I did face to face, but I still think it's something that works really well. And in fact, I'm looking to change the language I use, because I don't just work with those pupils in a lesson. There's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes.
There's two cats and yet a dog on your mug, which is... I hope the cat, that's why you face it towards the camera, so the cat doesn't
face. I only teach groups. So what I do is, if there is something to pick up on, I will pick up on a general theme in the next session that maybe pupils have found difficult, or I refer to something that a lot of pupils found difficult in the last session or something like that. But a lot of the time, because I'm working towards a specific curriculum I've created, because I do a lot of 11 plus prep, another reason for the marking is then, you know, if a child has struggled specifically, I can specifically address that in the marking.
Welcome to the Qualified Tutor Podcast. I'm your host, Ludo Miller, and I'll be interviewing tutors and thought leaders from across the tutoring landscape to inspire, inform, and motivate you to become the best tutor you can be. The Qualified Tutor community is a safe and supportive space for tutors who love to learn and grow. We offer training, resources, ideas, and a chance to connect with like-minded tutors. If you'd like to continue the conversation, join our Qualified Tutor community at www.qualifiedtutorcommunity.org or find it in the show notes.
Well, a huge welcome to Charlotte Watson, a tutor, group tuition leader, agency director, newly enrolled student, author, and one of our community members. Qualifying with a B.Ed in 1994, Charlotte has since gone on to hold a number of varied roles within the education sector, including Senco lead and an education consultant for local educational authorities in London. Importantly for today's episode, we'll be discussing Charlotte's current work, in which she delivers group tuition via a blended model and provides high quality resources and teaching and learning material available to all. We are very lucky to be joined by such experience on the pod today. Welcome, Charlotte, and welcome to the Qualified Tutor Podcast. So, Charlotte, we'd love to start with, what kind of a student were you?
I use the word responsive, but what I mean by that is I responded to whatever the teacher was like. So for instance, if the teacher was enthusiastic and passionate and engaging, then I would engage with them and I would just go with the lesson full gusto and give it my all. However, if the teacher was disengaged, was disinterested, then I must admit I would find it incredibly hard to engage in the lesson as well. And unfortunately, I would become one of those pupils who would probably sit at the back of the classroom and chat away and doodle and not take much interest. And in terms of any advice for teachers or tutors out there, I would say always have that passion. Don't ever lose that. If you lose that passion for your subject, for your pupils, for education, then you know it's time to stop. Ironically, I became an English teacher, even though one of my worst teachers was an English teacher. She clearly didn't want to be teaching anymore. She clearly was quite cynical about the education system and really didn't give it the all that she could. And I remember studying Julius Caesar for GCSE, and there was no passion for it. There was no engagement. We literally just read through the script, didn't have a clue what was going on. And I basically had to buy a whole load of pass notes and guidance to help me revise and learn from this book. And when I'd read it and really understood what it was about, I was so disappointed that she hadn't engaged us, because we could have had some really exciting lessons if she had done so. So yeah, that was it.
don't leave any student ever thinking what you think about your old English teacher.
Alternatively to that, one of my best teachers was a lady called, I will mention her name, Anne Bridgeland. So if you're out there, Anne Bridgeland, please, you cannot underestimate what an amazing teacher you were. And I did actually have the pleasure of meeting her as an adult, as a practitioner, and was able to relate this to her again. But there was a teacher, she was my German teacher. And I even actually asked to move German classes in order to have her as my teacher, because again, the other German teacher was very disengaged and didn't spend the time and invest in us to really explain things. And I found German incredibly hard. And I knew I could only pass my GCSE and learn ein bisschen of German if I actually had her, because she would invest in us, spend the time explaining. She had mountains of patience. She made it engaging. She made it fun. She made it interesting. And yeah, I think any pupil, whether they're a keen pupil like myself, and I was someone who loved learning, will be disengaged if you do not engage with me, if you do not show me you care, if you're not interested, even the, and I was, you know, I was a good student, but I will become disengaged if you don't engage me.
Anne Bridgeland, if you're out there, please get in touch. I'd love to celebrate what you've created, which is you've passed on your wonderful teaching and tutoring skills to someone else.
And I still remember to this day, she loved the TV program Dallas. Which doesn't exist anymore. That's how old I am.
That's the key to learning good tutoring. Okay, Brill. Is Wonderlearn Tuition, do you have a network of tutors as well? Or is it just yourself?
No, I never intended to create this thing. I left school at a time when I just wasn't sure which direction I wanted to go in, but I knew I just wanted to stay in teaching and do what I love the most, which is English. And I literally started just as a one-to-one tutor, doing about 30 hours a week racing around South London, realizing this wasn't the best use of my time. And I was doing a lot of repetition and thinking I could be delivering this lesson at one time for these 6 to 8 pupils rather than doing it separately. I don't think they would suffer any less from being taught in a group. In fact, I think they would gain something from interaction, engagement, and a sense of togetherness with other pupils all going for the same goal. So it wasn't long before I started developing group tuition as well. And now, to be honest, group tuition is all I do. I do very few one-to-ones. And I would only do those for very limited amount of times for specific reasons. Because I'll be honest, I think I had children who started with me one-to-one and then they transferred to the group option once that became available. And they just thrived so much more, to be honest, in the group situation. There are obviously some pupils who definitely benefit more from the one-to-one lessons. But I think with the kind of work I'm doing, that sense of interaction, togetherness, that sense of going for a specific goal and learning from each other and listening and finding the perspectives from other people, I think for my type of pupils and what we're aiming for, they get so much more out of group lessons. And so I transitioned into group lessons in 2017, and I haven't looked back really.
Wonderful. How do you prevent a 6 to 7 to 8 group tuition class from becoming like a classroom? Really, how do you maintain that personal level that tutoring affords?
I think. Because I do know the pupils, I get to know them. I give a space at the beginning and the end of lessons for little personal interactions to take place. And also one thing I do, particularly now that we're online specifically, is I make great use of the chat function on Zoom. And you'd be surprised how much individual interaction I can have with pupils as I'm keeping the thread of the lesson going. But I also afford time at the beginning and end of my lessons, before the next lesson starts, if pupils have any concerns or want to speak to me personally. I allow time for that to happen. I also, if I am thinking that a child needs specific feedback above and beyond the lesson, I will leave voice messages or I will arrange to speak to parents. So for me, it is very important. My tuition, you know, although at the moment I charge per lesson, it's much more than a lesson. It's very much a package. And in fact, I'm looking to change the language I use, because I don't just work with those pupils in a lesson. There's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes. So as you say, you know, in terms of making it still very personalized, there is feedback and marking going on in between lessons. There are messages going on between lessons. The parents know that at any point in a week, if there's issues with the work or anything they want to discuss, they can contact me. Obviously, I'm not a 24-hour service, but they know that I will always get back to them. So there is a sense in which the parents know that they can always contact me. When I was face-to-face, again, I allowed time within the sessions and after and before the sessions, parents could always arrange to speak to me. And it's just finding out the little personal things about each child. You know, I know which children support Liverpool, which children support Chelsea, that kind of thing. I know
Don't name them. Don't name them, Charlotte.
No, I won't. No. And I know which children like unicorns, which children like fidget spinners. So it's all the little things. We've had a running joke with some of the older pupils about hair. And every time they would come online over the last year, we've compared notes about lengths of hair and, you know, whose fringe has been cut this week. And I think just to remember that whether you're online, whether you're face-to-face, whether you're group, individual, there's always that personal touch that you need. And it isn't superficial. You know, for some of these pupils, cricket is the most important thing going on in their life right now. So acknowledging that and just seeing how they're getting on in very brief and simple ways, but it means a lot to the pupils.
Yeah, and then, you know, integrating or assimilating games on that theme into the set can always be very helpful as well, can't you? Yeah. Counting, you know, doing mathematics equations using cricket scores or cricket numbers, or, you know, Liverpool and Chelsea play each other six times and the average score is 3-2 or whatever, yeah.
Although I am an English tutor, so...
You are an English tutor, okay.
I'm joking there.
Okay. Write a story about the cup final. Yeah,
exactly. Funnily enough, this week for the year fives, we're looking at rugby, which is another big interest for a lot of the pupils. And we're going to be looking at whether tag rugby should be the only sort of rugby that happens in primary schools, or whether contact rugby is still something that's appropriate. So it, as you say, it's gaining their interest and things that are in the news even. So although I do have a curriculum and I have resources that I've kind of used over and over again, if something is important or something does come up, obviously with COVID things have changed and what they're interested in has changed, I will tweak my lessons to kind of address that or make it, you know, make the context more meaningful for them.
To join the growing number of qualified tutors, enrol now for the Level 3 qualification for tutors. This 8-week online facilitated course covers the roles and responsibilities involved in teaching and learning, with a particular focus on inclusion, assessment, and feedback. Upon completion, you'll be awarded a Level 3 in education and training from Ofqual recognised training provider Highfield Qualifications. You will also gain a Qualified Tutor Quality Mark, the independent quality mark for tutors. Whatever your starting point, a qualification for tutors has to be the next step. Enrol today at qualifiedtutor.org/training.
Okay, well, let's continue that theme of resources then. So what would you say for primary level English, what are your top three resources? And that can either be a style of resource, or it can be kind of an online resource platform that you use.
I mean, it changes a lot. I I use a mix of resources. So some of my resources are made by myself, and I would very much look to be developing that, because I think I know my pupils so well. And although obviously I do rely on resources that are published, they don't always completely match what I need for my pupils. So I'll be honest with you, I do make a lot of my own resources. A quick plug here, I have actually written a book that Schofield and Sims are publishing this month, hopefully, which is all about the 11 plus and is a practice and revision book for English. So I will definitely be using that. But again, I won't just use it piecemeal. I will, or in a standard way, I will always pick and choose how I use it depending on the needs of my pupils. I do use online providers such as Plazoom and Twinkle. And obviously there are a range of books and resources such as CGP and the like, but you do have to be careful with those because obviously there is copyright issues. So I do have to be careful, which is why, if I'm honest, I've ended up writing a lot of my resources as well, because obviously those are only licensed for individuals. I do obviously pay for licenses as well. So there's various exam papers where I bought a kind of a tutor subscription. I would say, I'll be honest with you though, obviously again, and this is really interesting, but you as a teacher is the most important resource. And I know that's a bit sycophantic, and funnily enough, I'm constantly looking at how to improve my resources. You know, this is one of the reasons I'm doing a course at the moment, to improve my online provision and the resources I use. But I had a parent recently who comes to me, but also comes to a very well-known nationwide provider. And she was talking about the differences between what I provide and what they provide in terms of the resources, the online resources, the papers, the videos. And she said, for a start, mine come up pretty close to theirs. But what she said, and this is in no way to disparage any work that any other provider does, but she said the one thing that, you know, we come to you for is that it's you and it's your engagement and your passion, which sometimes, particularly if you're going with a company where there are hundreds and hundreds of people who just do it as a job, you might not get that same passion. And I want to be careful, because obviously in no way am I saying you can't go to other people and other people don't have their own unique selling point. But for me, that reminds me that you can have all the whistles and bells and resources in the world, but unless you as a tutor have the fire and the passion and the patience and the flexibility and all the other things a human needs, all the resources in the world are kind of barren and dry if you can't bring them to life.
Yeah, and that's the stereotype of a low quality or a poor tutor, is one that just sits with a pre-prepared resource and adds no flavour, no passion, yeah, no life to it. So absolutely, that's kind of one end of tutoring, but really the end that we're searching for, and that, you know, we have so many wonderful tutors to show, you know, who display that this strategy is really to use the resources to add to your own, you know,
yes,
your own passion.
This summer, join us for the first ever Love Tutoring Festival, a celebration of tutoring in all its aspects. We invite you to bring all your experience and expertise to make this event the most exciting event to ever happen in the world of tutoring.
The festival, running from Monday the 28th of June to Friday the 2nd of July, is a rich and varied programme of free events, keynote presentations, workshops, live podcasts, and practical demonstrations spread out over a whole week. And don't worry, everything will be recorded. So as long as you're enrolled, we'll give you access to any of the events that you miss later on. We're also offering a limited number of tickets for our famous CPD accredited workshops. If you purchase a ticket to any or all of these practical and engaging workshops, you'll also receive a certificate of completion after the event.
To register for the free pass and to grab your CPD tickets, go to qualifiedtutor.org/Love Tutoring Festival.
Now, just moving a little bit back towards your teaching days. Could you tell us kind of some of the lessons or skills that you took from your teaching into your tutoring?
One of the key things I've realized over and over again is the need to be flexible and the need to be able to change things quickly at the last minute. The amount of times, for instance, I've either been on a free period and just about to settle down to get down to some marking or some assessments, and I've been told you now need to cover X, Y, and Z because they're ill or whatever. Or I've gone to teach this wonderful lesson that I've created on an interactive whiteboard, and for some reason the connection is not working and I can no longer use it. There are so many times when, although yes, you always need to be prepared, and I think those times when I wasn't so prepared always kind of freaked me out and got me nervous and my heart palpitating. Sometimes you can be the most prepared ever and there's a glitch or something changes, the fire alarm goes off, this has happened to me, someone's sick on a table in the middle of your room, and you never know what's going to happen. So I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned is about being flexibility. Is about being flexible and staying calm, whatever happens. And particularly at the moment, you know, there are so many things that can stop a lesson happening over Zoom. People can't get into the lesson. The other day, my husband was cooking and he set all the fire alarms off in the house. You couldn't hear a thing. So you have to be prepared for the unexpected. So from a kind of logistics point of view, I think flexibility has been something I've really brought, or people, you know, they cancel at the last minute. Other more obvious things, such as being organized, having a clear idea of what you want to achieve in the lesson and how you're going to achieve it. All the things a good teacher knows how to do are easily transferable into tutoring. I think, as you were saying, you know, a poor tutor is somebody who thinks they can just turn up and say to a student, what are we going to do today? Now, there is a place as well for being guided by a student. I have a number of older classes where I am guided by what they want to do. But I think just kind of leisurely continuing with some random idea about what you're going to cover is a mistake, I think, if you're not careful, tutors can make. And I still think whatever you're teaching and whatever level, you do need to come to that lesson with the child with a clear idea of what you want to achieve with them and how you want to achieve it.
Yeah, okay. So how much of your time is spent preparing, you know, doing exactly what you've just said then, preparing the session and getting
the student? Yeah, I mean, I, at the moment, Monday to Thursday, do three groups in an evening and two on a Saturday and two on a Friday and sometimes on a Saturday as well. So we're looking at anything between about 13 and 15 groups. So people, you know, say, oh, you only teach 3 hours a day. And I'm thinking, well, that might be true. But as I said before, I do choose to give my pupils tasks and activities to do for homework. So there's a lot of marking to go with that, which personally I do feel is important. I think it gives them feedback. It gives them a resource they can look at, refer to time and time again. I spend a lot of my time marking. And I do spend definitely a few hours a week evaluating what we've done in the lessons for 1 week, looking at what I've got planned for the next week, but adapting those. Obviously, because of the way I teach, I do have a curriculum that I have set up. So in the early days, a few years ago, I spent a large amount of time preparing that syllabus for every single year group and then preparing the resources that go with. I do have a bank of resources I use now, but that doesn't mean I stick to them rigidly. And every year, even though it's got easier because I do have that bank of resources, I will always, every week, spend a good amount of time, a few hours, reviewing them, looking at the pupils' work from the week before, thinking, does what I have planned match where they're at? Do I need to change it and adapt it? So although I start teaching at 4:45 every day, I tend to start between 8 and 9 in the morning, getting ready, marking, as well as all the admin and everything else I have to do. I do spend a lot of time working now. I am working with a coach to look at how I can maybe simplify some of the activities and things I do, because I am aware I've given myself a lot of work, but I will never want to make shortcuts with what I do. So for me, reflection is very important in terms of what I've taught and what I'm going to do next.
If you are telling or teaching your students to be reflective in their learning and to take in feedback, then certainly reflecting on your own processes and your own strategies is equally as important.
Yes.
Much like reviewing our podcasting strategy, or reviewing a marketing strategy, or reviewing exactly the way that you do all your personal admin. So absolutely, I think it's very important for younger or even less experienced tutors to hear how much time should be given to preparing sessions and giving feedback after sessions and writing reports and follow-up emails.
One thing I would say, when I first started, after about a year of doing Wonderland Tuition, and people saw me growing quite quickly and saw the successes I had and saw my Facebook page and all these wonderful photos of happy people and lots of work and feedback, a lot of teachers who were still in school started contacting me saying, oh, I've always thought about tutoring. I think it would be a much better lifestyle for me, et cetera, et cetera. Now, there are tutors who really do make that work for them, excellent tutors who really do fit it around their lifestyle. But I would say that I am working equally hard, if not harder, in my little one-man band, doing my tutoring, because it really matters to me. I'm probably a bit of a perfectionist, a bit of a harsh critic on myself. But what I would say is, in my position, I certainly didn't choose tutoring for an easier life. I did it for lots of reasons, but it wasn't to be able to sit back and just be leisurely teaching 3 hours a day. And I think you're right. I think if you really want to be an effective tutor, you have to think about the amount of time in prep, evaluations, reflections, and so on and so forth that you really want to give this if you want to be truly effective.
Yeah, I think it's probably more to do with the fact that you get to choose kind of your own hours and you get to choose your own work and you get to choose how you work. Although, having said that, you don't really get to choose your own hours, do you? Because the school day finishes at a certain time each day, and then dinner starts happening and then they go to bed. So there are only a couple of hours that you can tutor. But at least, I guess,
much more self-determined. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have been looking at my dates for next year. I've decided how much time I'm going to take for this holiday, that holiday, how many hours I'm going to work. And I suppose because the demand is there, I have chosen to do so many hours. If I wanted to work fewer hours, I could. And obviously with more hours, increasing workload comes. So I'm still, as you say, in charge. And if people do want an easier life, I say in inverted commas, I suppose they can choose that. But you will still, if you want to be effective, you still need to put in the groundwork and the foundational work in terms of prep as well. You can't just turn up without having prepped.
No, certainly not. So take this wonderful thread of giving tips to those who are looking to start out. Take this further, please, Charlotte. What tips do you have for someone who is looking to set, for tutors who are looking to set up their own business? We've covered some of the main points already, but
I would say don't expect it to come all at once. I mean, if you're a good teacher, you can easily have confidence in yourself and you can easily transfer many of your teaching skills into tutoring. I spent a year from 2016 to 17, September to September, basically working, I think, Monday to Sunday, all hours I could fit in to build up the momentum. I know sometimes tutors worry that they won't get enough pupils. But if you go onto certain tutoring agency sites, you can easily build up your numbers from that. But, you know, I certainly didn't arrive with 15 groups already made. You know, I started small. I in fact, went part-time in a school and then realised I had enough work to then be able to go full-time into tuition. But, you know, I worked really hard that first year. I had one day off, which was Christmas Day, all year. And in fact, the only other day I had off was I was supposed to be working New Year's Eve 2016 and my cat died. And I was so upset that I had to ring up my tutees, and some of them, I spoke to them personally rather than their parents. And I was in tears, literally telling them my cat died and I couldn't teach that day. But I'm serious, you know, I literally put in all the hours I could to build up the momentum. So from a practical point, don't expect everything to be fully and readily made for you. You will have to put in the hours at the beginning, but things will start to turn around as people get used to you, as people see your results, see what you're like, and, you know, get recommendations from other people. So from the practical side, that's what I would say. Be prepared to work very hard at first until you get a bit of a following. From a teaching point of view, be as you are in school. Be flexible, prepare as you would in school in terms of, even if you're working with a one-to-one, you'd always have some sort of objective. You'd always think about your timings. You'd always think about what you're going to achieve in the lesson and how, and prepare resources. So don't feel, although in many ways I did have to change my teaching style in terms of what I specifically taught, in terms of the content within a lesson, all the things I knew about teaching in terms of having a clear vision for the lesson remain the same. You're a good teacher in school. Continue using all those good things you know about teaching in your tuition as well.
Okay, yeah, brilliant. And that's a clear strategy, isn't it? That's a clear path and certainly an optimistic view of how, or at least a positive view of how a teacher can go from the classroom to the tuition session. Which is likely in online tutoring world to feel quite similar to an online classroom, really, isn't it?
Yes.
On Zoom, it's really, I guess, not too different. When we go back to face-to-face, there's obviously much more visible, much more ostensible.
Yes.
So that's something also to bear in mind if you're thinking of making the transition in the current climate.
The one thing I would say, obviously, if you are teaching or tutoring one-to-one, that in itself is quite different. Compared to teaching a group. It's very intense teaching one-to-one. So if you're specifically changing from being a teacher who's used to teaching, I don't know, 30 in a class to teaching one-to-one, it is a very different experience. So you would have to think about how you're going to keep a child engaged during a one-to-one session. And the one thing I would say is definitely break up the session into little segments. And make sure that, you know, every 10 to 15 minutes, you're thinking about a change, either in input or in content or in activity. So that is one thing I would say that's different. I obviously teach groups now, so in a way, the transition is slightly less. But thinking back to being a one-to-one teacher in the early days, there was quite a big jump in difference. And what I don't feel you can do, which I think people do have to be careful of, is you can't just set them an essay and sit and watch them for an hour. That is not a good use of your time.
Yes, you're not a vigilator, are you?
No. There will be times when obviously you are giving them, say, a segment of 10 minutes, perhaps, where you are getting them to work on something. So then you have to think, well, what am I going to do in that 10 minutes? Am I going to look at something else that they've been doing and mark that? I think it's very important that, you know, parents are paying a lot of money for a tutor, particularly if it's one-to-one. So you have to make as much use of that time as you can. So even if they are working on something for 10 minutes, think to yourself, well, what am I going to do in that 10 minutes?
Yeah, absolutely. So those are some key tips. I feel we've covered many of the areas of, you know, thank you as well for just looking into a little bit there into one-to-one tuition, because obviously what you do is group tuition, which is much more similar to a classroom environment, but obviously a large part of tutoring as well is the one-to-one, and there are some extra skills there, aren't there? Some extra perspectives to look out for. Thank you very much, Charlotte. We haven't promoted your book enough. Please go into a little bit more about how we can find your book, what it's going to be about, why we should read it, please.
Okay, so it's going to be a fantastic resource for pupils who are preparing for the 11 plus English exam, the first stage, but also the second stage. It has been written in conjunction with Schofield and Sims, who are a very well-known publisher. So it should be available in all good bookshops, places like WH Smith, Waterstones, as well as independent bookshops, and obviously online at Amazon and Schofield and Sims' own website. Personally, the way I'm going to use it with my pupils is I'm going to give it to them for the summer holidays to use as a final revision and practice when they're not having lessons with me. It goes through very specifically all the different skills and knowledge that you need. So it goes through all the different spelling, punctuation, grammar, and vocabulary. It got knowledge and skills. It goes through comprehension. It goes through creative writing. And it gives you little tests at the end of each section to test your knowledge, which can then obviously be applied into the multiple choice type questions and the stage two tasks that you get for creative writing. I can't stress enough what a good resource it will be for, particularly in the final stages of revision and practice for the 11 plus, but it can also be used as a good reference for pupils to have perhaps at the beginning of year five to then work through whenever they get stuck on a specific task. I wouldn't say you need to read it from beginning to end. It can be used as a resource that's dipped in and out of, but there are going to be lots of good practice tasks to do as well.
I may have missed it. What's the title of the book?
Well, I haven't actually seen the final title yet, but I think it's going to be called 11 Plus Revision and Practice.
11 Plus Revision and Practice. Okay, wonderful. I was listening in there and suddenly thought, I haven't heard the title yet, but I missed it. Okay.
11 Plus. The final title is up to Schofield and Sims.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you very, very much, Charlotte. You've given over a great number of tips from your years of experience in both tutoring and teaching. So we're very lucky to have had all of that, really.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here. I love talking about teaching. I remember a friend of mine who I was with in my second school, who was only a couple of years ahead of me in terms of her teaching experience, and I would go around her house of an evening and absolutely bore the socks off her poor boyfriend at the time, because we would just sit there talking about our pupils, talking about teaching for the day. We were supposed to be having a social, but all we do is end up talking about everything to do with teaching and what we were doing. And what's so wonderful is this person is now still a very, very good friend of mine. She's now what I consider a super head. She's been a head for a while. She's been an executive head. She's an amazing person. And we still get together and talk about teaching and learning. even though we're supposed to be switching off, we can't help ourselves. So, you know, for me, I love talking about teaching. I love talking about tutoring now that I've made that transition.
And as one of our newest community members as well, you can get in touch with Charlotte further in the community, or of course at wonderlearn.co.uk, which is Charlotte's group tuition company. So we're delighted to have had you on the pods. We would love to have you back on if it's something that you love doing.
Oh, yes.
We'd love to facilitate that. Share, it's collaborate, it's learn. So there's plenty more to discuss there, plenty more to learn about. Okay, thank you, Charlotte, very, very much. And we'll see all our listeners next time. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Qualified Tutor podcast, where tutors share their expertise to support the tutoring community. If you'd like to continue the conversation, join our Qualified Tutor community at www.qualifiedtutor.com.
qualifiedtutorcommunity.org or find it in the show notes below. We exist to connect, share, and learn with you because tutoring is a small job that makes a big difference.